Well, sports is doing its best to lean in wherever possible to support the healthcare workers, the people on the front lines of the battle of COVID-19, and sports venues around America, all lit up in blue, as so many other very familiar places were. Just to say thank you in a small way from the world of sports to the people who deserve a huge thank you, who we will continue to celebrate as we go forward. Hi, everyone. Lunch Talk Live on this Friday. Mike Tirico, so glad you are with us. A terrific guest list, including Tony Dungy, Michelle Tafoya, the two Robbies, Musto and Earl, Luke Kuechly as well, and Rich Eisen with a nice announcement of Rich joining our NBCSN family during this time we're all talking sports. They are all ahead coming up here in this next hour. They've asked me to bring a prop every day for the show. I'm going to run out of props pretty soon. So I have a prop right here, and I'm going to hold it until I knock the TV down. Isn't that great? Until I knock my camera down. That was good by me. I'm going to hold the prop for reveal a little bit later in the show. That was a nice job, wasn't it? Let's get to our first guest before I completely mess this up. We had a good week going, and I totally screwed it up. Our first guests are our golf guys, Paul Azinger and Dan Hicks, who will join me now. And we can discuss where we all were, guys, 4 weeks ago on Friday when professionals were handling cameras, microphones, audio equipment, and everything else. We were all at the Players' Championship, and then everything has changed. It's been an incredible 4 weeks since. Dan, I'll start with you, just how this whole thing has turned around so quick and so fast. Your reaction to the way this month has gone for us.
The Zing, my man over there, right next door. I think it's one of those deals at the Players' Championship. I remember specifically being at dinner Wednesday night with a lot of our Golf Channel NBC colleagues and thinking to myself, there's just no way that this tournament is going to finish. And that was Wednesday, and they had just announced that the next day, on the second round on Friday, there was going to be no crowds. And even then, I thought, I don't see how it can finish. And in the end, they played the first round, and that was bizarre to get on a plane and come home on Friday. But it was at that point where you didn't know where this was going to go, and I don't think any of us could have anticipated where it's gone now. I wake up every day and think, is this really happening? Yet it is. It's real, and there's some really tough stuff going around the world. So sports is on the back burner. We can sit here and talk about it, but I cannot wait to get it back and resume some sense of normalcy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think.
And Paul, we all will be at Augusta. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, we all are, I think, dying to get back to work. But certainly this COVID virus has put golf and sports in perspective. But maybe it's a race for sports, all these sports leagues, to see who can be the first one back. That might be a race you don't want to win, though. But we'll see what happens. I think that the powers to be in the game of golf are very, very optimistic and just showing us all that they're visionaries too, Mike, with all these preset dates just in case we can get back out the door.
Paul, Justin Thomas was on the show a few days back, and we discussed that reality of what that calendar might look like for golf. And Justin, I thought, brought up an interesting point. Those who can practice, who have still access to golf facilities, there's no reason in his mind to go grind right now, because who knows what that run is going to be like. If you were a current player, a top player in the world right now, how would you try to handle these couple of months of knowing you're not going to play for anything big, at least for a little while?
It's kind of like a rain delay. And when you have the lead, you know, sometimes you know, you got to just keep your mind ready to get started back in the game. And you got to be ready for the playoff after or whatever it may be, if you have to wait around. And these guys have to wait around. So I think they have to stay mentally involved. I believe they have to stay physically fit, which they will. And I'd play as much golf as I could for fun. I wouldn't be grinding and working on. I'd chew as many low scores as I could and just have fun with my buddies, try to social distance and but what a great break if you live in an area where you can hang out. You know, there's a lot of people in these big cities, when they walk out their front door, they're in a hallway. And I pity those people. I feel for them. And we're just happy and blessed to be able to play, you know, to be able to be outside if you can play golf at all.
And Dan, one of the challenges in golf of getting this restarted is it is such a global game. It's everybody, coaches, players, caddies. When the tour shows up, it is truly a circus coming together from 50 different places, and everyone disperses so quickly. That's, I think, going to be one of the challenges of how we get this restarted at some point in golf.
Yeah, I think I've heard a lot of talk, Mike, about how, well, maybe golf is one of the better sports to be able to start up the quickest because it is outdoors and it is spread out. But you just talked about the global game it's become. And when you talk about this compacted schedule that is coming up, and it's exciting to think about all of these major championships, the FedEx Cup playoffs, the Ryder Cup. I mean, the U.S. Open at Wingfoot is scheduled the week before the Ryder Cup. Can you imagine all of these guys trying to get as hot as they possibly can to play as high a caliber of golf they can? They could really have a great fall. But again, I think the challenges are exactly what you talked about, getting all of these people from around the world into these sites. And, I've heard a lot of talk about playing all these sports without fans. I'm not a fan of that. I think sports depends on fans, and I think that you're also risking the people and the infrastructure that is there at all these big events. What about all those people serving food and everything? So I hope it gets back as soon as possible, but I think it's going to be a real step-by-step, day-by-day process to see, when these sports come back.
I'm going to kick back for a minute, Dan. You've got your 18th tower partner there, Paul. So I'd love to hear you ask Paul a question and listen to you guys just chat for a few minutes.
Yep. Okay. Zing, what about the compacted schedule? I think it's intriguing. I think also it produces a lot of challenges for a lot of players to be ready. Take Tiger, for instance. If Tiger is feeling physically fine during this stretch, this guy could have quite a run, and that goes for everybody else too, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely, and there's a lot on the line for those guys as well. I mean, there's a good look at what the schedule is going to be. What a shame the Open Championship has been forced to be canceled. But this is just another reason for these guys to stay in touch and connected to the game physically and mentally. Start visualizing some of those courses you might get to play. But it just shows, if somebody gets red hot in a schedule that's that tight. Somebody like Tiger back in the Tiger era could have run the tables on these events, and maybe somebody can snap off a couple majors. It's a great opportunity when things get dialed back up. It's a real optimistic look at our future, and I just leave it up to the visionaries in golf and TV to try to lock down these dates to give us all something to look forward to. But as a player, I would be ready to rock and roll. And hope that I can peak right about then. That's our goal always. So these guys that hesitate to go out and practice, they don't want to be peaking right now when there's nothing to play in. You want to pace yourself. If somebody peaks and gets red hot, somebody like McIlroy's got to be looking at this as a great opportunity for him to pad his stats and his march into history.
And also,
Great
Zing,
point. Dan,
yeah.
Wingfoot, so yeah, go ahead, but you keep going.
No,
Go ahead.
go ahead. You go ahead. You got a Wingfoot question. I'm all in. What do you got?
Yeah, I figured that. I was going to say, when you saw the calendar and saw September, you have played Wingfoot a lot in September, that time of year. We know what U.S. Open setups are like and how fast they are. Can Wingfoot be in that kind of shape in September, knowing the agronomy of it all?
Absolutely. It is a great time to play golf in the Northeast. And the Wingfoot, I got to give a shout out to Steve Rabideau, who's been the golf course superintendent at Wingfoot after they had the last one in 2006. The guy is a genius. And the fall is sometimes the best time. I'll say sometimes, all the time, at least for the members to get out there and play. The golf course is in absolutely sensational shape. And so the greens will be fast, hard, firm. The rough might even be lusher with the fall weather, which makes the grass grow a little bit better at that time of year. So as far as the U.S. Open at Wingfoot in September, it could be absolutely perfect as long as the weather cooperates and there's not a lot of rain. But I think it's an ideal time to play a U.S. Open at Wingfoot.
And Paul, fingers crossed this calendar holds up. What do you think Augusta will be like in November?
Same thing, except it'll be more brown, I imagine. Overseed should be okay, I hope. I don't know if they're going to be able to overseed it in time to get it to grow. It could be a completely different Augusta National than we're used to seeing. We certainly won't see the flowers. Maybe the leaves are going to start falling off the trees early there at Augusta. I don't know, but as far as getting it firm and dry and fast and ready and as they'd like, I'm sure if anybody could do it, it'd be there at Augusta National. And Dan, you're right about Wingfoot. I mean, with all those rains of summertime come pouring in, and that rough at Wingfoot would be it'd be just about as thick as it could get.
Well, as both of you know, because you both love the game so much, you're always trying to find that next best way to prepare yourself. So I thought this was an interesting one on social media of maybe how to envision a putt, envision the line of a putt, and how you can maybe set up a little bit of a visual guideline. Paul, any thought on what Matt Killen's doing here with 100 tequila bottles?
I hope he hasn't already gone through them. I hope they're not empty. You know, if he wants to win a contest, he needs to squeeze those closer together, and then he could win a contest, because that's a pretty amazing putt. It went right down the shadow's edge. It was awesome.
How many takes did that take? You wonder how much tequila he went through to actually be relaxed enough to make that stroke. I don't know.
To get to the point to come up with that idea to do that was pretty funny. And by the way, something else on social media. Exactly, including you and Rowdy Gaines called a swimming race, which you guys would be doing this summer at the Olympics, called it for someone online, which is absolutely hysterical too. So we're just trying to find ways. And Danny, that's the other thing I'll wrap up with, that it's pushed back for a while, but I know after the golf season and this run that we would have had on NBC and Golf Channel, you were still getting ready to be with Rowdy again for one more run in the U.S. Olympic trials, and then the swimming in Tokyo, which hopefully is pushed back a year. But I know what a special time of the year that is for you.
It's the best. And, you know, Mike, now involved with the Olympics, it just doesn't get any better as far as, you know, the anticipation of it. I couldn't wait to get to the trials, the swimming trials in Omaha, to be with Rowdy and Tommy Roy, our producer, who happens to do all of our golf, but he does our Olympic swimming as well. It's such a fun sport to do every 4 years, and you just kind of gather the crew and you build up a month ahead before the Olympics. So looking forward to the trials and in the anticipation that you get by, you know, as another Olympics approaches. And now that it's going to be delayed a year, you're going to have to just kind of relive that anticipation process, but we'll do it again. And it's going to be, I think it could be, depending on what happens, one of the most inspirational Olympics that we've ever been involved in.
Yeah, a lot of us are feeling that and hoping that. Zinger, stay well down there in Florida. Dan, you're the best, sure. By the way. Nice job by Hannah Storm, Dan's wife, for getting the proper seating for Dan so the
right.
Shot looked good. The shot looked awful before we came on the air. Hannah took care of it. Good job,
yep.
Hannah. Well done.
Yep, that'll be more
Thanks,
dishes
guys.
For me in the offing, Mike. Great to be with you, pal. Thanks a lot. Zing, good to see you.
See you guys.
Yeah. You got it. Paul Azinger, Dan Hicks, our 18th Tower NBC Golf Channel lead golf team. Two terrific guys. Speaking of terrific folks, Tony Dungy and Michelle Tafoya. We're going to talk football and Minnesota when we come back on Lunch Talk Live. Well, spring has sprung in many parts of the country, but as a lot of us work from home, some of us in the Midwest can tell you no. Evan Peterson, who's been working his tail off on research for us, also has jumped in with some video help. Snow, where Evan is in Minnesota yesterday. A little cold front came through, and it went from 70 to about 30 and snowy, just like that. A couple of folks who spend a lot of time and have ties to the Twin Cities of Minneapolis join us as part of our NBC NFL family as well. Michelle Tafoya and Tony Dungy. Michelle calls the Minneapolis area home now. Tony, of course, was a long time rock star, great quarterback, University of Minnesota Golden Gopher. Let's start there because we've got a ton of time to chat. Tony, to watch Minnesota come back to football prominence this year, to see the Gophers have success. I'm curious first what you thought about it, and then Michelle, why don't you piggyback on that with what it was like living there and seeing the Gopher experience bubble up for everyone this year. Tony, you first.
Now, I tell you, Mike, it was really exciting. PJ Fleck, I'd gotten to know him a little bit, spoke with him, and he was excited. He thought they had a chance to have a really good team. It had been a long time for us, and all of a sudden, I'm starting to get calls from my classmates and teammates. Hey, do you think we're going to the Rose Bowl? What about this? Can we win a national championship? And we hadn't had that kind of talk in years, so it was fantastic.
Michelle, what was it like in the Twin Cities?
It was crazy. You know, I married into a Gopher family, and I knew Tony before I met my husband, who played baseball at the U, and his dad, was a football coach at the U and knew Tony very well. So it was really interesting to know Tony and then to later find out that my father-in-law coached him. But anyway, he's exactly right. It was so exciting and people were wondering, what is the limit? We ended up going to a bowl game. My husband and family and I went down and the fans were just over the moon. I mean, it was really fun. And just the other day, my son was watching his Twitter or something and said, "Oh, Mom, we just got a 4-star defensive end from somewhere." So, you know, the excitement is real. The excitement is real.
That's the way it all bubbles up and starts. So, Michelle, you're with Al and Chris every week on the road for Sunday Night Football, right? And we're in the studio doing Football Night in America. And invariably, the conversation turns to the Bucs. And we turn to the guy who used to coach the Bucs and knows Tampa really well and still is down in that area a lot. And we always ask Tony, Michelle, what are the guys in the barbershop saying about the Bucs? Because that's always where you get the hub of the conversation. Well, Tony, after Tom Brady, what could they be saying in the barbershop about the Tampa Bay Bucs right now?
They are so excited, and all they're hoping is that we get this season rolling and get to play, because there is so much energy and excitement here. Tom Brady has been in the playoffs every year that he's been healthy, and the feeling is we're going. It's just, who are we going to play against in the Super Bowl?
Michelle, it's still hard to envision, isn't it, Tom Brady in a non-New England uniform and in a Buccaneers uniform, too?
And I may have some breaking news that I just read for regarding this, that Tom Brady has applied for trademarks, one being Tampa Brady. Oh, no, so Tampa Bay, and the other one being Tampa Brady. So he has applied for these two trademarks, apparently, to make a lot of shirts. I just read that. I don't know if it's factual, but the reports are there. It's weird. This is not where I expected him to go. I think a lot of people were thinking, you know, the Chargers, maybe the Bears. I even heard the Raiders at one point. But I think he's probably going to be attracted, number one, by the wide receiver core in Tampa Bay. But no less by Bruce Arians and then Tom Moore, their offensive consultant, who Tony and I know very well, who coached with my father-in-law and coached with Tony in Indianapolis for all those years. And Tony, I got to believe that Tom Moore is kind of over the moon with this one.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, and I think you're right. That does that is what has Tom Brady kind of comfortable in this situation. I went through this with Peyton when he was changing teams. He wanted to stay in the AFC because he knew the AFC so well. He wanted to go to a team that had a chance to be a not only a playoff team, but a Super Bowl contender. So you figure that's what Tom is looking for. But I think Michelle's absolutely right. I think he has looked at the whole scenario. Gosh, look what Bruce Arians did with Carson Palmer when he was in his late 30s. Look what Tom Moore did with Peyton Manning, an older quarterback. And these guys, Tom kind of grew up with these guys, and they're in their 70s or late 60s coaching. And Tom is saying that this is perfect for me. I've got good wide receivers, and they've got a dynamic offense. All they kind of need is that general to put it together. And he is, I can see where he'd be excited about this.
You know what, Tony, I'm just thinking, look, we are as neutral as possible with covering the NFL, because we know that fans from both teams are always watching our broadcast. But Tony, understandably, you have a soft spot for the Buccaneers because of your years there. So here's Tampa and the place where you live, in a franchise that you really like to see do well. And then here's Tom Brady, who you went head to head with you and Peyton for years. That's got to be kind of odd when you try to put all that together and try to reconcile it a little bit, Tony.
It is really crazy. I've got my boys. We were just talking to them to quiet down before we started here. But they are coming to me now, Dad, we got to go online. There's a Tom Brady jersey, $199. And I'm thinking, we would have never even talked about that before. But they're so pumped up and excited. The people down here who haven't had a lot to cheer about the last 10 years, all of a sudden now it is. You talk to people, hey, how are we going to do this year? What do you think? Can we really get it done? So it is exciting, but it is going to be a little change for me to have to start rooting for Tom now.
It's pretty funny. Michelle, you know, so many games have been re-aired over the years, and you've been a part of so many of these big games, Super Bowls. They re-aired a game that you and I were both a part of in our previous life in 2006, the return to the Superdome for the New Orleans Saints. It's interesting. It feels like of all the sports, because of the draft and the free agency, NFL life has continued to go on during this time when everything else has been stopped. It's been a different feel. In some ways, it feels like a distraction. In some ways, people have said it's insensitive. I'm just curious how you've viewed NFL life continuing to go on as we've gone through these times.
I am grateful that it's going on. And by the way, happy 84th birthday to our friend John Madden. I want to get that in before I forget.
Absolutely. But, you know, absolutely.
Okay, so I didn't mean to steal your thunder. I just want to make sure we got that in. I'm glad it's moving along,
no,
Mike.
Thank you.
I'm glad it's moving along. And fingers crossed that we have some semblance of a season. That's what everyone's wondering about, you know. And I don't think it's look, sports is a great distraction in America. And for people to say it's tone deaf or it's insensitive to be covering sports right now or to replay these games, I think it's honestly, in a way, it's a service to people in America who are missing the Final Four, the Masters, everything we've been talking about, Omaha. I noticed Dan Hicks promoted or talked about Omaha. We were all getting ready to go to Omaha for the swimming trials. The Olympics are gone. All these things, poof, right? So I think that Saints game was, we were there, Mikey. It was remarkable. And the most touching thing to me, and I'm sure you saw this, was that Steve Gleason, now, you know, battling Alzheimer's, tweeted out a video of himself after that game when he was young and vibrant and able to speak without a computer.
Yeah.
And he said he actually cried watching it because it was a great time in his life. He's still cherishing every moment, but that was a great time in his life.
Tell you a funny story about
that. Got to me too, and it's a reminder to good, Tony. Good.
I was going to tell you a funny story. The first one that NBC re-aired was the Manning Bowl. So we're watching it here at home, and we've got young kids now who weren't born then. And my little 7-year-old is watching and says, "That guy looks like Dad." And one of the other kids said, "Yeah, he does, but it's not him because that guy had hair."
That's too funny. Oh. I love that. I've gotten a couple of those, too, in my house as well. Tony, I want to hit you on two quick NFL things. I'm going to wrap up with something else with Michelle. Cam Newton sitting out there right now. Is there a place where you think it may be a fit for him?
I don't know. I'm really surprised, though. Cam and Jameis Winston, these are two players. They were the first picks in the draft. Talented guys. Jameis Winston has thrown for 5,000 yards in a season. Not many people have done that in the history of the league. Cam has led a team to a Super Bowl. You would just think somebody's going to snatch these guys up. I don't know where it is, but I think both of them are going to end up kind of doing what Ryan Tannehill did. They're going to go somewhere, maybe be the backup quarterback, but by the end of the year, I think they're going to energize a franchise.
And one last quick one for you. How hard do you think the drafting process is going to be for some of these teams without all the usual checks on players in person that they would normally have been able to do?
I laugh at that. For years, we drafted like that. I used to be the guy that wrote down on the whiteboard who got picked and what team they were from and that kind of thing. It can be done. We're making this way too hard. The draft will go just fine.
I want to leave you guys with you both are really inspirational people to a lot of us because you're so positive and thinking about going forward. And in different ways, you've been doing that along the way here. Michelle, yesterday, I think it was yesterday, you got a chance to visit with a journalism class, some students from Arizona State, which has a terrific communication school. And we're all seeing our own kids at colleges, try to figure out how to do the world of academia online here, and same for the teachers and professors as well. I'm just curious, your experience of doing that, Michelle, and the spirit that you may have received from the kids who are still sponges in a very changed academic environment.
They really are. It was so interesting to look at all the kids and where they were sitting. you know, some on a bed with a big pillow, some stretched out in some other way in their dorm, and just trying to do what they can do. It was really fun. These kids, like you said, are sponges. They are ambitious. They are hungry. They want to get out there and work. And so, you know, it was great. And I think this has become, my fear is we stop interacting as human beings altogether. I hope we don't, because this has become really easy. You know, this has become almost standard. And I hope that's not how we all ultimately interact. But in this crisis, it's been great for my kids. That's how they've gone to soccer practice, my daughter, and baseball practice, my son, and sports and school. And so I think it's been kind of cool.
I just got to speak with about 30 news reporting students at Syracuse. I've done a few of those, and it inspires me when I get off those hour calls in the classes, guest lecturer, because it's fun to do. It's fun to see their energy. It gives me energy. Yeah. Tony, you are one of the great leaders and spokespeople that I know, and inspirational. There are a lot of folks at the end of another long week with more long weeks to come. If you wouldn't mind a few seconds of coaching all of us up at a very special and meaningful time on the calendar of what we're going to need to get through the next few weeks, I'd love if you'd share some thoughts with everyone.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about being online. Our Bible study is normally 200 people in one room, and now we've had to go online. So the last couple of weeks, we've had like 3,000 people watching, and we're going through this Easter week. Wow. And Jesus said that, hey, you're going to have grief, you're going to have trouble, you're going to have sorrow, but eventually, at the end of the week, your grief is going to turn to joy. And I think that's where we are. We've got to just stay focused, look to the future, and know that we are going to see some joy come out of this, and if we don't get discouraged. And that's been my message. I spoke to the USA wrestling team just after they found out that the Olympics had been postponed. Some of these guys training for 3-4 years. And now they're saying, you know what, I've got to look forward to 2021 and put my focus there on the future.
Two of the best, not just at what they do, but who they are. Tony Dungy, Michelle Tafoya, thank you, friends. And we'll all be in touch. Best to your families. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Great to be with you, Mike.
One day closer. Bye, guys.
See you, Michelle.
You got it.
Bye,
thanks,
Tony.
Coach. Thanks, MT.
All right.
When we come back, Luke Kuechly, Carolina Panthers, will join us. Interesting time for Luke as he's stepped away from playing in the NFL, but certainly has a perspective on a lot of things around the league. He'll join us as Lunch Talk Live continues on this Friday. Well, there is John Madden. Michelle Tafoya mentioned him in the last segment. Got our Sunday Night Football on NBC run kicked off with Al Michaels in the booth. Coach Madden, coach to so many of the folks who've been in football, in television and football, and one of the all-time greats. John Madden, 84th birthday today. Happy birthday, Coach. We celebrate one of the all-time great guys. And for generations who may be home and not at school, who know how to play Madden, the video game, it's a good time to go onto YouTube or somewhere else and go check out Madden the Coach and find out what John Madden's coaching impact was on the league that allowed him the platform for the great video games. Happy birthday to Coach Madden. I'm going to guess John Madden loved Luke Kuechly. I love Luke Kuechly watching Luke Kuechly play. Luke, the top 10 pick in the draft, great run at BC, then with the Carolina Panthers, and retired right after the season this year. He joins us now. Luke, just out of curiosity, were you a Madden video game player during your time?
Absolutely. That was a game that everybody played growing up. And we had a lot of Madden tournaments. We'd play the first half. Whoever won the coin flip was at a huge advantage because you'd play 2-minute quarters just through the first half. So it was a fun game. And I'm sure a lot of kids growing up had the same experience.
And Coach Madden was somebody who made such an impact on so many of us in the football industry as well. I want to start with the retirement deal, and then I'm going to get to some other things here. When in your mind did you know what, this is the end of the run for me? It's been a great run, but this is going to be the end.
I think, you know, as the season concluded, I really kind of sat back and thought about it. And, you know, I was so fortunate to have the opportunity to play the game at for 8 years, and the people around me were fantastic. Everybody in the Carolina Panthers organization treated me well. They taught me a lot. I learned a lot from the coaches to the equipment guys to the training staff all the way up through the front office. I couldn't ask for a better situation, but once the season ended, I just knew that, you know, I'd give it everything I had got, but I was done at that point, and it had nothing to do with changes in coaches or anything like that. I just think that I knew in my heart that I gave it everything I had, and at this point, it was time for me to move in a different direction.
I've spoken with Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson, a couple of guys who certainly had more to give to the game in terms of their ability to play at a high level when they stepped away. And you were your eighth year. You made the Pro Bowl 7 times, 5-time All-Pro on that All-Decade team, which just came out. You certainly could have played at a high enough level for another few years. What is the feeling that I know I could go back to camp and play, yet you walk away at this point in your career?
I think that's the part that's hard, is because I love the game of football. I love everything about it. I love the studying aspect. I love the team aspect. I think the thing that guys talk about a lot is I'm going to miss the interaction with the guys, you know, every day. I was talking to one of my buddies the other day about it, and I said the biggest thing I'm going to miss is going in every day. You think about it, you know, I've never thought about football as a job. You know, I wake up in the morning, you know, I throw some sweats on, I throw a pair of gym shoes on, put a t-shirt on, I roll in, I eat breakfast with my best friends, and then, you know, you get to go play football. So I think it was one of those things that's, you know, I still, you know, I know when the season comes around, I'm going to have that pit in my stomach knowing that, man, I wish I was still out there. But you know, I think you look at it in the sense that, you know, you've got a long life to live, and what's the best thing for you right now? And, you know, you have to make hard decisions in your life. And I think this is one of the harder ones I've had to make. But, you know, hopefully I can find a way to stay involved in football somehow, because it's something that I've done since a young age, and I feel very passionately about it.
Young age? What are you, 28 now?
I'm 28. I'll be 29 in about a week, and I started playing when I was in fourth grade. So I mean, every fall back from fourth grade, you know, whatever age 10 or 11, I've been in training camp. So I don't. It's going to be a weird feeling with no training camp this year, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
And Luke, I'm curious about this with all athletes, whether you're 28 or 35, 36, when you walk away, you still have more to give, and you have a lot more life to enjoy. Yet you may not reach the top of your profession as you have here. And for athletes, sometimes your athletic career, whenever it ends, that's the thing you're going to be known for forever, and other stuff might be an offshoot of that. What are the other areas maybe attached to football that you're looking at where you can say, okay, I can scratch that competitive itch and still do things at a really high level that can somehow replace that real adrenaline rush that winning or losing football games gives you?
I think if you can find a way to stay involved and be in the conversation with football, whether that's with your team, whether it's coaching, whether it's some sort of front office role, whether it's a network role, I think it's one of those things where I'm trying to explore all my options at this point. I think, you know, when guys come in, you know, on Friday or Saturdays, and you talk to the production crew, and you know, you talk to guys like, you know, Witten and guys that have played Romo and Tiki, I'm sorry, and Rondé, he talks to us a lot. Those guys, you can tell that they played at a high level and they still have an ability to stay involved with the game. So I think that part is something that's attractive to me, just in the sense that, you know, they played it, but now they're still involved with it in an interesting role. And there's other guys that I've played with that took the coaching path, and you know, Chase Blackburn's a guy on our coaching staff that played for, you know, 10 or 11 years. He played in New York when they won the Super Bowls, and then he played with us for 2 years, and he's our special teams coordinator. I've talked to him a lot about it. I'm like, Chase, man, what's it like? And he said it's the closest thing that I feel like I've gotten to playing the game. So there's a way to do it. You're never going to be able to replicate being on the field, but I think there's plenty of avenues where you can not only get in, but there's an opportunity to work your way up once you do get in.
Well, let me test some of that broadcasting itch, got that. Cam Newton. Cam Newton, your teammate all the time there in Carolina. Where do you see his skill set right now, and his desire right now to find a chapter two for him in the NFL?
Well, if I know Cam pretty well, and I feel like the biggest thing that I always think about with Cam is how competitive he is. I don't think he's afraid of an opportunity where he might have to work his way into something. He's not afraid of a challenge. You know, I think there's a model that's kind of in place right now with what Tannehill did in Tennessee. You come in as a backup, but then as the season progresses, you get an opportunity. But I think, you know, everything you look at, you know, obviously New England's in the conversation. I think the Chargers are in the conversation. I think Cam, you know, he gets back to being healthy. He's still a dangerous threat. You look at what he's done the past couple of years, minus his injuries, has been fantastic for us. And I think the thing that makes Cam special is what he can do inside the pocket, but also what he can do with his legs. And to me, you know, once he gets everything back healthy, he's going to be back to where he was before. And I think the competitive edge in him isn't going to allow him to dip below that.
We've talked a lot about Tom Brady with our guests during the week. I want to ask you about the quarterback who's got the long-time stay in the NFC South, and that's Drew Brees. In your position there in the middle as a linebacker, you guys are going eye-to-eye, face-to-face for 60 or 70 snaps of a chess match. Can you describe from your side of that what kind of fun that was to be in those battles twice a year?
Well, I think the thing that makes Drew special is everything happens when it's supposed to happen. Drew doesn't do stuff on accident. He doesn't do stuff that he hasn't thought about during the week. Everything that he does during the game has been planned out, thought out, and executed before it happened. So the thing that I knew when I knew Drew was special, obviously I grew up watching him, but I watched him in pregame warmups one time. It was a Thursday night game back in 2016, and I was watching him go through his pregame routine. And everything he did was just like he was in the game. Drop back was perfect. Once he hit that back foot, the ball was out. He was throwing the ball before a guy got out of a break. And then once he threw the ball, he'd go through a second, third progression. And when I saw that, I'm like, that's the reason that Drew Brees is who he is. But, you know, in the game, it's fun to compete against him because you try to do your best during the week to try to pick up on tendencies, whether it's personnel groupings or formations, and try to put it out there in the game. But it's fun because you can see him when he comes to the line of scrimmage. He's got certain things he looks at every play, whether it's a rotation, whether it's the front. What am I looking at in the front? Where are the linebackers shifted over to? He's got a couple different cues that I think he has that he picks up on pre-snap that allows him to either make a check or understand where he's going with the ball before the ball is snapped. So it was a chess match because you can't show him what you're doing before the snap, because if he knows what's going on pre-snap, you're in tough shape.
Well, I love talking ball with you, and more importantly, on behalf of a lot of football fans, we loved watching you play at BC and with the Panthers. We wish you all the best. Please stay in touch, and I hope you and your family all stay safe. Luke, thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All-decade linebacker in the NFL, five-time All-Pro Luke Kuechly. When we come back, the Robbies without Rebecca. All right, they'll go with the B-host for them after this.
This is why we are here, everybody. Yeah! Oh, my God.
No way!
Texas was great, but do we really need a mechanical bull?
Two Robbies on the ball, or the two Robbies on the beach? Kind of feel like we're missing something. What is it? Who needs Carl Martino and Rebecca Lowe?
We ride together.
We die together.
Bad boys for life.
That fan fest was a blast. Fan fest down in South Beach and in Miami with the two Robbies. Robbie Earl, Robbie Musto, who of course our Premier League analyst, join us here for a little bit. I'm sorry you don't have Rebecca with you guys, but we'll muddle through with a very half-baked option to sub in here off the bench. Robbie Musto, I'll start with you. Just the way the league stopped, with Liverpool clearly on their way to the title, but things on hold, it seems like there's more conversation than not in the soccer space in the UK about if we don't finish the season, it's not right. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree with that. I think nearly everybody, Mike,
wants the season to finish. Of course, Liverpool fans would be desperate for it to finish. It's been so long since they've won the top flight title in England. But of course, the virus will tell us how long we've got to wait. And there are some people that say this can't wait forever. And there's other leagues, Mike, I know in Belgium they've done it. I know other leagues have done it, are thinking about doing it as well, where they're averaging out the points per game and finishing the season. And where you are after that averaging is where you finish. Now, I don't like that. I, of course, would prefer the season to finish. But we've just got to make sure it's safe and appropriate to do so. But all of England particularly really wants this league to come back. And we've just got to be patient, Mike.
I think one of the problems, Rob, when you talk about finishing, I was in the same camp, really. We've got to get this finished. And you think about the Premier League title and what makes it unique is, obviously, Liverpool will be the first title in 30 years. The top four spots all get Champions League places, and there's a real fight for that with some big clubs, including the likes of Manchester United, Chelsea and Spurs, trying to get in there. And then, Mike, you've got to think of those teams at the bottom. There's three teams at the bottom of the league who generally would go out, and there's three teams right from the Championship, the league below, that would come in. Now, there's all kinds of things we're hearing. Legal issues have started with whether those teams in the Championship don't get a chance to come in the Premier League. Teams at the bottom are not sure if we finish where we are. Do those teams go down? Do we stay as it is? I mean, I was at the camp where I thought it had to be finished. You know, we've got to get a result on this. But the more I keep hearing about the virus, the more I read, the more I see, the more I hear of deaths happening every day and the numbers going up, all of a sudden football becomes very secondary to what's going on in the outside world.
I want to bring this up, guys, this story in the New York Times today. Premier League originally asked players to take a 15% pay cut to help offset some of the losses for the teams. Mm. It's turned into a bit of a controversy. Let me read this paragraph. We'll put it up on the screen. They cycle through various suggestions, 25% pay cut, 15% deferral, suggested by the league, no cuts, a series of deferrals proposed by the union. Then they focused on a combination of cuts and deferrals. It amounted to 30% for a year that could be reduced depending on how much the losses for the clubs could claw back. I think what this speaks to, and I'll start with you, Robbie, first, there seems to be a little bit of a backlash coming back towards the players, not the clubs, from the UK fans.
Mm. Yeah. It started with the government, I think it might have been the health minister, who went on TV and basically called out the professional footballers, the Premier League players, and basically said they've got to do their part. Now, I thought it was not well handled. I didn't think he came across well. And there were players who really took an assumption to that Premier League players were making their own mark. They were working within their own local communities. They were giving. And they've actually put a fund now called the Players Fund, which is players who've been having this conversation for about 2 or 3 weeks, helping the NHS Trust and all the charities to make sure they can support when they were. I thought they were a little bit of an easy target for the government, and I didn't like the way it was handled.
Yeah, I think it's much better now, Mike, because the players themselves, Jordan Henderson phoned other captains around the Premier League, and they've come together to produce this fund now to help out in the virus relief, wherever that might be. The players weren't happy that the money might be going back into the football club, and they weren't really sure where it was going. This is a much better solution.
Interesting to watch there and how that'll play out in terms of public opinion. Robbie Musto, Robbie Earl. We miss you on Saturdays and Sundays, but thank you for joining us. When we come back, Rich Eisen. Stay with us on Lunch Talk Live. All right, putting to bed week one of Lunch Talk Live here on NBCSN, and thanks to everyone in our NBC family who's joined us, as well as the athletes from outside and Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the National Hockey League. We'll continue to stay in this space as we continue to stay in this holding pattern with sports on pause for a little bit, and join you for just some distracting sports conversation, noon to 1 Eastern, 9 to 10 on the West Coast, every Monday through Friday. Now, a schedule note. We were supposed to hear from Rich Eisen, but we're not going to at this time. However, a visit with Rich and yours truly is on our YouTube page at NBCSports.com's YouTube page. Rich, his show, which many of you are familiar with, whether it's from radio or from TV over the 5 years, Rich's show is noon to 3, the 1 to 3 Eastern Time, so 10 to 1 West Coast. That will appear on NBCSN after our show starting on Monday. So you'll have Lunch Talk Live here noon to 1 Eastern and Rich for 2 hours from the West Coast after that. And in our conversation, Rich will talk about the NFL draft, which he has covered for many years with the NFL Network. So his show will be on. So we'll have 3 hours of live, fresh sports conversation on NBCSN from Monday through Friday during this time that we are without sports, just to help keep you entertained, distracted. Look, we know the important things are happening when your municipal leaders give you either government briefings or there are speeches from anyone in government about the next shape, next steps that are going on. So we know those are the important things to watch, but when you need a distraction, come to us. And on our YouTube channel and our social media channels as well, you'll have all of that available for you to enjoy at your convenience and when you'd like. So speaking of that, if you haven't noticed this week, sports and news on television has left the beautiful, comfort, well-controlled studio and gone to basements, backyards, home offices, you name it, around the country. Everyone from the nightly news anchors to your favorite cable TV primetime hosts to people who put a show together in a week, like our NBCSN group here, are finding different places to host shows. And one of the things we're noticing is the little bit of interior decorating talent that some of us have or don't have, as the case may be. So we're sports, right? This is a game. Ahmed Farid, our NBCSN colleague, has been sitting back, noticing it all, and somehow he's found all of these backgrounds, and he's found a way to make it into a game.
One of the cool things about the last 3 weeks is we've gotten a rare glimpse into the homes and apartments of people all around the world, including some of our NBC Sports personalities. This is not really my home, just a green screen. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Background Battles Episode 1. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Catherine Tappan. No clutter with Catherine. That's pro. Perfectly fluffed pillows, that's pro as well. But Dale, we have not one but two Elvises. We got double Elvi. And then a solved Rubik's Cube, which may have just been purchased, but I can't tell. So, Victory Dale. Oh, two Premier League personalities, Robbie Musto and Rebecca Lowe. So Robbie's got the books in the background. Books are everywhere. Books are big right now. We see books. Not often on their side. That's unconventional. Rebecca, this is relatable. She's got to-do lists in the background. She's got bills that she has to pay. I'm actually not sure what those are, but I'm just assuming that's what it is. Victory, Rebecca. We got Mike versus Hall of Fame jockey Jerry Bailey. So Mike, of course, has covered probably upwards of 75 million events, has the memorabilia from many of those events. But Mike, you got matched up with a one seed here. A man on a beach in Florida in front of a palm tree. I want to go there right now. And because it elicits that reaction in me, Victory Jerry. So this is a warning to everyone out there. Get your background looking good, because you may find yourself on the next edition of Background Battles.
I'm honored for the acknowledgement, Ahmed, but I feel like I've been challenged a little bit. So maybe I will remind you that this is Racing Week in America and Daytona Speed Days is coming up next. And I could go with this if you want. I could even put it on, but I would look completely foolish, and that's a meme I would see for the rest of my life, so that's not going to happen. But maybe we'll see that coming up in backgrounds as we go through the next few weeks. Let's leave you with something to laugh and something to smile. I mentioned this earlier with Dan Hicks. He and his swimming partner on NBC, Rowdy Gaines, have called some great swimming moments in Olympic history, and they replicated another one earlier this week.
And out comes Mary Pruden, the sophomore from Columbia, and the biggest moment of her career, the finals in the Olympics in the women's 200 IM.
Okay.
And what a moment for her. This is a huge crowd, Dan. They are all on their feet, and the official finally calls her to the block.
They've gone silent, this standing room only crowd, as Pruden heads into the water, into the butterfly.
What a start. And the turns are absolutely critical in a long race like that, and she nailed the first one.
And Pruden's going to have the lead at the halfway mark as they get ready to switch to the breaststroke.
Oh, this is her breaststroke, and she's actually building on her lead, getting into this last turn.
Pruden trying to hold off the field. On her way to Olympic gold. And gets it done at the wall at the last second.